Hi, everybody. Great to be with you again. Today, we're looking at chapter 12 called Fourth Political Practice. In fact, if we stop and just focus in on the title for a minute, we can go word by word and see where things stand. We don't even need to go further into the chapter yet. Fourth, let's start there. We know what that means. That means not the first, not the second, not the third, not communism, liberalism, fascism, Nazism. Fourth, that's clear enough from what we've read so far in the text. How about political? Well, we began to get some access to the broad domain of the political in last session, where we saw that it includes the pre-modern, the modern, and the postmodern in their various potential configurations. And we saw that Dugin's going to have something new to say about where we find ourselves in that spectrum. So we have a sense of the meaning of fourth. We have a sense of the meaning of political. However, we should admit that the concept of the political here is not something so easy to grasp, since it definitely means more than day-to-day politics or the ins and outs of various policies. You haven't seen Dugin discussing much of economic policy or trade policy or something like that in this text, jurisprudence. The concept of the political is much broader and more fundamental than the notion of politics in a day-to-day sense. And in fact, you see that for Dugin, the concept of the political touches on questions about the meaning of history, about being and time, about God. So let's give the word political its due here and not rush past it or treat it too slightly. What we can say is that since it's the fourth, we know that Dugin's political project is somehow opposed to the modern, since Dugin sees the first three political theories as modern, and that it has some relationship to the traditional or pre-modern through myth and archaics, tradition and traditionalism, and also that it has sympathy for fundamental conservatism and for the conservative revolution. Now, we've also seen that it's postmodern to an extent, perhaps even surprisingly so, as we've already discussed and as we'll discuss again in this session. So all of that is to say that we're prepared by our study so far to begin to offer an interpretation of the first two words in this chapter title, fourth and political. We have at least a preliminary answer to the question, what does Dugin mean by fourth and what does he mean by political? In fact, I would say we know enough that we could spend a great deal of time talking about that. But what about practice? Has anything in the book so far prepared us for a confident interpretation of what practice might mean in the context of the fourth political theory? How is practice understood? And for that matter, since we're raising the question of practice, we can turn in again on the question of theory. What is theory for Dugin? And how are theory and practice related? These are some key questions. On the bottom of page 181, Dugin begins to offer some preliminary formulations about the fourth political theory from this perspective. So let's read what he writes there. Quoting, "How can we try to form a clear conception of what the fourth political practice is? By reversing the order of these two columns as a first step, we should obtain practice as theory, taking principle as manifestation, mentality as activity, and thinking as action. What is the fourth political practice? It is contemplation. What is the manifestation of the fourth political practice? It is a principle to be revealed. In what aspect is the myth revealed as ritual? It becomes theurgic fact. What is activity as mentality? It's the idea that thoughts are magic, that thoughts can change reality. It's a world where there's no barrier between idea and realization, a magical view of the world based on the idea that thought is the only thing that crosses worlds, and everything we encounter is nothing more than a thought. What kind of thought is it? Pure thought, but active thought," he writes. You get the idea here. He's reversing the columns and even merging them. And here we have to address a very important point. A world that avoids duality somehow resembles postmodern virtuality, a world where things are merged, confused, mixed, where the borders and boundaries have been erased, so it seems, or blended. Well, that's what Dugin writes on page 182, and you might be getting the sense that what he's doing is not different from what postmodernism does, which again would be strange since he's opposed to the prevailing form of postmodernity. But virtuality, he writes, this sort of world that avoids duality, that blends and mixes in the prevailing sense of postmodernity, virtuality, he writes, is just a mockery of the fourth political theory in practice. And yet, you're partially right if you get this postmodern sense from Dugin, because in his words, quote, postmodern reality is closer than all previous topologies, including the theological and the proto-theological, to the unique model of the fourth political theory and practice. And now I think it's worth actually reading that to you. Again, postmodern reality is closer to the unique model of the fourth political theory and practice than all previous topologies, including the theological and the proto-theological. Just as opposition to postmodern post-liberalism cannot have recourse to the figure of the political soldier, as we saw in the last session, so too it seems it cannot be based on theological or proto-theological topographies, even though it allows for the return of myths and archaics and is not opposed to the realm of the divine or to figures of divinity, as we've discussed, and as you may also know. Again and again, we seem to be discovering in Dugin a unique kind of postmodern political theory. So let's ask again, what is the relationship between postmodernity, as Dugin has analyzed it throughout this book, and the postmodernity of the fourth political theory? Again, the postmodernity that it is closer to, even more so than to theological or proto-theological approaches. In what way does the fourth political theory avoid the confused virtuality of postmodernity that Dugin criticizes? His response, very interesting, is that virtual postmodernity, quote, tries to mix the semantic fields of the columns on the horizontal level so as to become indistinguishable. We can say, he continues, that Deleuze's rhizome is a postmodern and post-structural mockery of Heidegger's Dasein. They are alike, and they are often described in the same terms, but pay attention to the fact of how postmodernism solves the problem of the reversal of the column's order. It solves the problem, he writes, by appealing to the surface. It mixes a bit of madness with a bit of reason and resembles the fourth political theory to that extent, but its horizontality, flatness, and lack of a vertical dimension is its distinguishing mark. Just to make that very clear, the postmodernity that he opposes solves the problem of the subject-object split by erasing the difference horizontally. Dugin's postmodernism, the postmodernism of the fourth political theory, the Heideggerian postmodernism, solves the split between subject and object by overcoming it vertically, and not by an appeal to a metaphysical concept, but rather by searching for the existential root or ground of the division in the first place. Dugin ends this chapter on the fourth political practice by calling it an active metaphysics meant to bring about the end of times. I think I should leave it to your imagination to an extent what Dugin might mean by that. Some people who have read him quickly and carelessly have imagined that he means the physical destruction of the world in some apocalyptic war or something along those lines. But we've read the book together carefully, and we've discussed in some detail his understanding of end and his understanding of time. I think it's fair to say that we don't know exactly what he means by active metaphysics and the end of times, but rather than trying to fill in all the blanks as we've done in other sessions, I propose to leave this idea to your imagination and to your consideration. It's one of the hints and intimations that he proposed at the outset, perhaps. And since you know that I follow Leo Strauss in some of these matters, I will follow him here too in not dotting all the I's.